This is the voice of Little Brother. You are tuned to 13,560 kilohertz, the voice of Little Brother. Coming up at the top of the hour, episode 76 of Little Brother. The following program is presented in English. From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 76 of Little Brother for the 12th of March, 2022. Stay tuned, Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started! The U.S. Senate have passed a bill requiring that organizations report cyber attacks and any ransom payments that they have made. The bill, dubbed the Strengthening American Cybersecurity Act, passed the Senate by unanimous consent and is now on its way to the House of Representatives. Once passed into law, the act will make the CISA the lead agency working with civilian federal agencies and providers of critical infrastructure during incident responses. It establishes an incident response and risk management program called FedRAMP and funds its maintenance for 5 years. Most tangibly, though, it requires that cyber attacks be reported to CISA in order to give the agency a sufficiently complete picture to coordinate a coherent response. Operations Security, or OPSEC for short, is the practice of keeping your information under control and not giving away more than you need to. For the average person, failing to do so is a risk, but not a huge risk. For public figures and politicians, it is a much bigger risk. For politicians leading nations at war, it is an enormous risk. To that end, President Zelensky of Ukraine, while on a conference call with U.S. lawmakers to discuss aid to Ukraine, kindly requested that there be no sharing of images from the conference call. Well, Senators Marco Rubio of Florida and Steve Daines of Montana apparently did not get the memo, or they didn't read it, or they didn't understand it, or they didn't understand the implications of it, because both of them did exactly the thing they were asked not to. Both of them posted screenshots of the Zoom meeting to social media, leading to some well-earned scorn from Representative Dean Phillips of Minnesota. Pro tip: when discussing things with someone who has survived multiple assassination attempts, please keep it under your hat. A Linux kernel vulnerability has been uncovered. The vulnerability is called Dirty Pipe, and it works by altering the cached contents of files. This has the amusing side effect of being able to effectively alter the contents of files that you don't have write access to, including files that are on read-only file systems, and yes, including even file systems that are written on physically read-only media, such as optical discs. The vulnerability does not alter the content on the media itself, But because the system will read from the cache first in order to improve performance, any apps that are reading from those files will be blissfully unaware of the fact that the files have been altered. This problem has been patched at this point, but you know the drill. Patch your systems! Cloud storage provider Backblaze are well known in the data hoarding community for their reports on the reliability of hard drives. This is an organization that purchases a profoundly large number of hard drives and other storage devices of various brands, models, and sizes, and a service that they provide to the internet as a whole is that they periodically publish reliability stats on the various models. Many of the models are also available on the consumer market, and so this becomes a useful measure to somebody shopping for large storage devices. Well, this week, Backblaze published their first SSD-only report, comparing the survival rates of some SSDs that they've had deployed to their environment from Seagate, Dell, Crucial, and Micron. And for the first time in a long time, Seagate is not on the bottom of the pile. So if you're in the market for an SSD, wander over to Backblaze and have a look at the report. Weight Watchers stands accused of illegal data collection. The Weight Watchers app, which they acquired with their purchase of Kerbo Health, collects a wealth of information in ways that we've come to expect from apps. The problem, however, is that in order to be compliant with the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act of 1997, they would not be able to collect this information on users under the age of 13. Apparently, rather than do the right thing, users as young as 8 years old have been guided to claim that they were at least 13. Had this been an independent litigation, that would have been one thing. But by providing the guidance, Weight Watchers have stepped beyond the pale. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. And you know what that music means. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Week. Wow, it has been a busy week in the world of pwnage. Our first winner this week is Samsung. So early this week, the Lapsus Data Extortion Group, the same group that leaked NVIDIA's content last week, leaked a large trove of data that they claim was exfiltrated from Samsung. Samsung have confirmed the breach and said that the breach contained some of the proprietary source code for the Galaxy series of Android devices. Samsung have stated that no customer data was stolen in the incident and that they anticipate that there will be little to no impact on their business operations. Can we call that an accidental endorsement of open source? No, I'm just kidding. Second, we find a story about our old friend, Log4j. This is the problem that just will not go away. It's the gift that keeps on giving. Log4j, yeah. So a Chinese hacking group known as APT41 exploited the Log4j vulnerability in an application called USA Herds, which is used by farmers to report and track diseases and other threats to livestock and to coordinate a coherent response to these threats. Unfortunately, it seems like someone thought that this was too boring or too mundane or too trivial to bring up to date. APT41 used it to get into the systems of 6 different state governments. The thing to remember here is simple. There is no such thing in a networked environment as a system that is too trivial to keep up to date. Any system that can be pwned can be used as a launchpad to pwn other systems. So, no matter how trivial the system may be, patch your systems. Our third pun this week is Roskomnadzor. Roskomnadzor is the Russian Federation's Federal Service for the Supervision of Communications, Information Technology, and Mass Media. George Orwell might have called them the Ministry of Truth. They are responsible for the overseeing of what media content are available in Russia, and it was their jurisdiction that led to the shutting off of Meta, BBC, DW, Voice of America, and so on. Basically, anything that might conflict with the official Russian version of events. As happens so often, distributed denial of secrets has their stuff. Roughly 817 gigabytes of content has been exfiltrated, and the magnet link is in the usual place. Finally, you might recall last week, the Conti malware group was running their mouths about taking a pro-Russian stance in the current war in Ukraine. Well, between then and now, a significant tranche of internal documents were leaked from Conti. We can argue about whether a betrayal and leak is a pwn, and indeed I have had that argument, but I am of the general opinion that it is. So, what can we learn from it? Conti is run just like you would expect any other business to run. They have an operational budget of about $6 million, used to pay salaries, buy tools, and acquire services, and of course, why wouldn't they be? It's nothing personal. It's just business. Last week, I talked briefly about shortwave radio. As you've probably picked up, I'm thinking this is going to be a critical tool in the conflict in Ukraine. Obviously, I'm also a radio enthusiast. The start of this episode was meant to mimic listening to shortwave. The main thing I wanted to share with you, though, is the new broadcasts on shortwave from the BBC World Service. I mentioned last week that they were resuming, and now they have. Let's have a listen, shall we?
You're listening to the latest world news from the BBC. The French and Turkish presidents have telephoned Vladimir Putin as diplomatic efforts continue over the Ukraine crisis. President Erdogan is reported to have urged him to declare a ceasefire. Turkey has already offered to host talks between Russia and Ukraine. The Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has had his third conversation with the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in the past 2 days. There's been another anti-occupation protest in the Kherson region of Ukraine, currently held by the Russians. Videos shared online show crowds of demonstrators, possibly thousands, in the center of the city of Novokakhovka, chanting Ukraina and waving blue and yellow flags.
Now, as I've mentioned before, sound quality is far from ideal. But thinking about what you have just heard, I want you to understand this. That signal was broadcast from a tower somewhere in the UK. And the recording I just played for you was captured in Chicago. 6 time zones and fully a quarter of the way around the world from London on the 15735 kHz frequency. While it is possible for Russia to jam the signal in some select areas, this signal can get into places without needing any local infrastructure to carry it. No internet is needed, no satellite dishes, nothing of that sort. A radio that can pick this signal up is reasonably compact. It probably won't fit in your pocket, but it could fit in your backpack, and I have first-hand experience to back that up. But what makes this important is that the ability to report the news to war-stricken areas without succumbing to censorship is very, very real. There's a lot going on in CyberSec as a result of the war. Measures, countermeasures, counter-countermeasures. So, let's talk about some of these things. It didn't make the podcast last week that Meta has blocked some Russian state media outlets, such as RT, from using their sites to propagate their version of the truth. This week, in response to that, Russia has returned the favor by blocking Russian residents from being able to access Facebook and Instagram, and while they were at it, the Russian authorities have also blocked many international Western media outlets, including the BBC, Deutsche Welle, and the Voice of America. As mentioned earlier, BBC has responded by resuming long-halted shortwave broadcasts to the region, And one hopes that DW and VOA, both of which are old hands at shortwave broadcasting, will respond to the blockade in the same manner. On the other end of the pipe, several internet backbone providers, notably Lumen and Cogent, have made the decision to stop carrying the traffic for Russian organizations. This is a reaction that is unprecedented. Prior to the war in Ukraine, no backbone provider has ever cut ties with a whole country. Hand in hand with the backbone cutoff, analytics provider AppFigures have noted a sharp uptick in Russia of users downloading VPN applications. As I mentioned back in episode 53, VPNs are great for masking your traffic locally and for moving your traffic to some other place. This is not usually as useful as some people seem to think that it is, but for Russians living in Russia right now, this is a very useful thing. As long as you are able to establish a VPN connection from Russia to someplace in the first world, the unfiltered internet once again becomes available. On the subject of VPNs, let's talk about the mother of all VPNs, Tor. Tor is something of a special case in the world of VPNs in that there is no set specific place where your traffic emerges. The places where your traffic appears, points called exit nodes, are scattered around the world and chosen more or less randomly per user session. You might go to one website and your traffic will come from one place. You go to another, it'll come from someplace else. Then there are hidden services. These are websites and other services that can only be accessed from inside the Tor network, and not from the internet at large. Sometimes these services will also have a regular internet address, but that's optional. Well, the news here is that Twitter have just added themselves to the ranks of Tor hidden services, making it possible for people to reach Twitter from undisclosed locations and from locations where the internet at large has been choked off or damaged. Yep, that's for Russia and Ukraine, but it may also benefit residents of other censored locations. It goes without saying that when you're cut off from something, you find a way to get by. That holds true as much for an aggressor as for a victim, and to that end, Russia is mulling over legalizing software piracy. Again, this pretty much makes sense as legal access to Western technologies have been fairly well cut off at this point. Privacy-oriented search engine DuckDuckGo, which, by the way, is my search engine of choice, has opted to downrank websites associated with Russia. DuckDuckGo CEO Gabriel Weinberg tweeted, quote, "Like so many others, I am sickened by Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the gigantic humanitarian crisis that it continues to create, #StandWithUkraine. In addition to downranking sites associated with disinformation, we also often place news modules and information boxes at the top of DuckDuckGo's search results where they are seen and clicked the most to highlight quality information for rapidly unfolding topics," end quote. By the way, please be careful in whatever efforts you undertake to assist Ukraine. Cisco Talos is reporting that there are Trojans being distributed that offer themselves up as things to assist Ukraine. In essence, turning the fervor of well-meaning people in the first world into an attack vector and taking advantage of the unfamiliar nature of whatever the software might be claiming to do. Obviously, I'm not going to tell anyone not to do their level best to assist with the war effort, but please, please, please be careful out there. Think carefully before you click. If something doesn't seem quite right, err on the side of caution. And for the love of all that is right and good in the universe, I'll say it one more time. Patch your systems. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fogaboo and The Crowded Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Thriller at Play, Plant Daddy, Azrael, Knight Rider 007, Native Buddha, Ed, and Fogaboo for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80, and our Who Got Pwned music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email, critter at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well. Complete picture to coordinate a There is no such thing in a networked environment as a system. Special thanks to Thriller at Play, Plant Daddy, Azrael, Knight Rider 007, Native Buddha, Thriller at Play again. How do you get in there twice?